There was water running into Janelle's mouth. She got her bearings and began to swallow deeply.
Easy now, miss. Easy. You don't want to be drinking too fast now.
A man was holding a canteen to her lips. He pulled the canteen away, but she reached for it and pulled it back.
Here now, miss. Go easy like I said. Otherwise, you're going to be puking your guts out.
Thank you.
How did a fine-dressed lady like you get here?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, it ain't all that unusual, you being kind of dizzy and out of sorts like that. Happens to lots of people when they start wandering around in the desert like you've done. One minute you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and the next minute you're lying on the ground just a-wondering where you are.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Hey, you're in the Sonoran Desert is where you are. The question I'm asking is, how'd you get here?
I'm not sure. I think I was in a wagon.
Sounds to me like you got what they call the amnesia. You think you can walk?
I don't know. I suppose I can, now that I have had some water.
Let me help you up.
It wasn't until Janelle stood up that she got a close look at the man who had come to her rescue. He had long, stringy white hair and a long, scraggly white beard. She couldn't begin to guess his age, though she suspected he might look older than he actually was. Even in the dark, she could see a warm and inviting sparkle in his eyes, though, so she wasn't frightened.
It's dark? When did it get dark? The last thing I remember was wandering around in the bright sun, and where did you come from?
I have a place not too far from here. I was out taking an evening stroll when I seen you. Oh, at first, I wasn't sure what it was I was looking at. Then, when I seen you as a young woman, I wasn't sure you was alive. But you're alive.
Yes, I'm alive.
Let's see if you can walk.
Janelle took a couple of steps, then stumbled and would have fallen had the man not kept her up.
Sorry.
Well, there's your problem, them shoes. I don't know how you got this far wearing them shoes.
Well, I can't very well go barefoot.
You'd probably be better off if you was barefooted. Now sit down and take them shoes off.
You aren't going to make me go barefoot, are you?
No. What I'm going to do is make you shoes you can actually wear. They won't be nothing pretty that you can wear someplace fancy, but they'll help you walk through the desert. Yeah, what's so funny?
Well, I'm not likely to be going anyplace fancy right away, am I? But I am in the desert.
You're all right, Missy, if you can laugh at yourself. Let's get them shoes off and see what I can do.
Janelle sat down and watched as the man removed both her shoes. He began cutting on them, and within minutes, the stylish shoes were redone as comfortable, if unattractive, moccasins.
You found something else funny, have you, girl?
Well, I was just wondering what my sister would think right now if she saw what was happening to these shoes. She bought them on Fifth Avenue at Madame Demarest's Fine Fashion Mart for my birthday.
I've never been to that place.
After another moment, he tied the little strips of leather onto her feet.
There. Try to walk now.
Oh, this is wonderful. Thank you. It is so much easier to walk now.
Hey, what's your name, girl?
Janelle started to say her name, but then she stopped. If the sheriff back in Phoenix really did make the claim that she had murdered Mr. Montgomery, there was likely to be a reward out for her. It could be the old man would keep her alive just long enough to take her back to Phoenix and claim that reward.
Your name is Jai?
It's Joe.
Joe? That seems like a funny name for a woman.
It's spelled without the E.
What E?
Never mind. I suppose it is a strange name. What's your name?
Cornbread.
Cornbread? You tease me about my name, and your name is Cornbread?
Well, it ain't the name I was born with. The name I was born with is Cornelius. But I reckon Cornbread is what I've been called pretty near all my life. Seems I liked cornbread a lot when I was a wee one. Besides which, I make the best cornbread you ever ate. Fact is, I got a pone back at the house now. Unless I miss my guess, you're probably right hungry.
I am hungry.
Got some bacon and beans, too. It'll be good to have someone to eat with.
They walked through the desert, the blazing sun and the heat of the day gone. Looking up into the sky, Janelle saw a display of stars unlike anything she had ever seen in her life. They were so bright and so close, she felt as if she could reach up and grab one. The magnitude of the stars gradually decreased from the brightest to those so distant they could only be viewed in total. They seemed to spread a luminous powder that made the night sky glow.
Ah, pretty, ain't they?
What?
I seen you was looking up at the stars. That's one of the reasons I sometimes take me these walks at night. In the daytime, desert can be awful bothersome hot. But at nighttime, it can be powerful pretty.
Though Cornbread's description fell short in its grammatical construction, Janelle was moved by the passion of his words.
Oh.
Janelle awakened the next morning to the smell of frying bacon. It had been the middle of the night when she was taken to the cabin. It was too dark and she was too exhausted to see much then. But in the light of day, she was able to peruse her surroundings. She was lying in bed. She was still wearing her dress, and as she looked over in the far corner of the room, she saw a mussed blanket which suggested her rescuer had slept there during the night. Though the cabin was rustic, it was exceptionally neat and well cared for. The floor was swept clean, there was no clutter anywhere, and the walls were covered with newspapers. With a start, she saw her father's name on one of the papers, then saw that it had to do with his shipping line. Her eyes landed on her rescuer. He was about 5 feet 8 inches tall and was wearing a red and black plaid shirt and denim trousers. Unlike many of the men she had seen in the West, Cornbread was not wearing a pistol strapped to his belt. He had his back to her, unaware she was awake. He opened the door to the oven on the small stove to check on its contents, and Janelle saw a pan filled with rising and browning biscuits.
Oh, I thought your specialty was cornbread.
Ah, Lord have mercy, girl. Don't go scaring me like that. Oh, I plumb forgot there's anyone else in here.
Surely you didn't forget I was here. Or do you always cook that much breakfast?
No, you just scared me for a moment, Saul. I didn't actually forget you was here. That's why I'm cooking a big breakfast. As far as my bacon biscuits is concerned, well, truth is, folks could have just as easy commenced calling me Biscuit, because my biscuits is every bit as good as my cornbread, as you are about to see.
It smells heavenly.
Smells done is what?
Cornbread took the frying pan from the fire. Then from the cupboard, Cornbread took down plates and cups, as well as knives, forks, and spoons.
Oh my, those plates are beautiful.
Cornbread ran his finger around the silver and blue trim of one of the plates.
My wife picked them out. When Sherman's troops came through, they burned our house and most of our things. But Marthy Lou saved these plates by burying them in the barnyard. I wasn't there, seeing as I was off fighting in the war my own self. But folks told me she stood on the porch holding a shotgun, just daring Sherman's men to dig up them dishes. She put a big store in them, and it was pretty nigh the only thing we brought with us when we came out here from Georgia.
Your wife is...
Cornbread nodded, then pointed outside.
Marthy Lou's lying buried on that little hill out back. The fever took her some 4, maybe 5 years back.
I'm sorry. From the way you talk about her, you must have loved her very much.
I still do. Just 'cause someone's died, that ain't no reason you got to stop loving them. She was a wonderful woman, Marthy Lou was. Maybe you'll think I'm a bit crazy in the head, but I sometimes still talk to her, even though she's been gone for all this time.
Why are you out here all alone?
I work for the railroad. I'm a track rider.
What's a track rider?
That's someone that rides alongside the track to make certain there ain't no bad rails. If I find something, I put up a signal for the engineer. One day I'll ride 10 miles north
then come back. The next day, I go 10 miles south, then come back. I only cover 20 miles of track, but I have to ride 40 miles doing it.
You don't say. You know, when you are on a train, you never think about such things. But it's people like you who keep the travelers safe. You ought to get more credit.
No, I like it that people just take it for granted that the track is safe. That means that me and the other track riders are doing our job.
After breakfast, Cornbread set out for work. He carried a couple biscuit and bacon sandwiches with him for his lunch.
You can fix anything you want to eat while I'm gone. I'll be back before nightfall.
Thanks.
Janelle thought of Mrs. Montgomery. Though Janelle had never met her, she'd heard from Nellie that the woman had been thrilled with her new hat. Leaving Phoenix, Janelle had been concerned only for herself, but now that she was in no immediate danger, she thought how difficult things must be for Mrs. Montgomery. She wished she could go to her and say a few words of comfort, but she knew she couldn't. She figured the marshal had told Mrs. Montgomery that Janelle was responsible for Mr. Montgomery's death. With no one to contradict the marshal, Mrs. Montgomery would have no choice but to believe it. Janelle hated that, the fact that Mrs. Montgomery would believe such evil of her. She hated it almost as much as she feared the consequences of being found and arrested for the murder. She had seen Marshal Cairns murder Mr. Montgomery, but he was right. Nobody was going to believe her over the city marshal. She tried to think of why the marshal would do that.
Oh my gosh, the map!
Reaching down inside her bodice, she found the envelope she had taken from the back of the picture. Stuffed between her dress and the camisole underneath, it had been protected and wasn't soiled with sweat. Janelle took the map from the envelope and spread it open. At first, she could make nothing of it. But as she looked more closely, she saw that the lines and squiggles were identified, though in a few cases she had to work to decipher the spelling. On the side of the mountain near Weaver's Needle was an X. Beside it was annotated the words, "Hole is here." Underneath that were explicit instructions. Once Janelle managed to interpret the terrible spelling, she was able to decipher the map quite easily. At the bottom of the map were the words, "This here map was drawn by Ben Hanlon."
Oh, my. Well, no wonder the marshal killed Mr. Montgomery to get this map. This is a real map to a real gold mine.
Folding the map up and putting it away, Janelle looked around the cabin to find something to occupy her time. She quickly figured just the thing.
Is this old nose playing tricks on me? Could that be apple pie I'm smelling?
It is. I hope you don't mind that I used some of your supplies for the ingredients. The apples were mine.
Mine? Darling, I'm happier than a pig in mud. Why ain't had me no apple pie since Marthy Lou passed on?
Cornbread, I want to show you something. Get your opinion, if you don't mind.
Darling, the opinion of an old man can't be worth much. But if you want it, I'm willing to give it.
Janelle reached under the mattress of the bed and pulled out the map.
What do you make of this?
Well, it looks to me like this is supposed to be a map of the Peralta vein. Of course, there's dozens of them for sale. Who'd you buy this one from?
I didn't buy it. I found it. What is the Peralta vein?
You ain't ever heard of the Peralta gold mine?
No.
Well, now, sometimes it's called the Lost Dutchman Mine, because a feller by the name of Jacob Waltz is supposed to have found it. Anyway, there was this here fella by the name of Carlos Peralta, a Mexican he was, who had him a gold mine hereabouts on Superstition Mountain that is supposed to be the biggest gold vein ever discovered. For a while, he was taking gold out of the mine back to Mexico. But along about the time this here country transferred from Mexico to the U.S., old Carlos brought in a large group of miners to take out as much gold as they could before the mine got took away from them. So what they done is, they started back to Mexico with a mule train loaded down with gold. But they was attacked by Apache Indians, and at least according to the story, the Apache killed all the miners, then took the mules, but left the saddlebags loaded with gold ore behind.
Is that true?
Well, ma'am, I do know that Walt showed up with a lot of gold.
Then it is true.
Oh, who knows? Let me look at that again.
Janelle handed the map to him, and Cornbread scrutinized it, then squinted as he tried to read the bottom line.
What's this say here? My eyes ain't all that good no more, and this here's writ too little for me to read.
It says that the map was drawn by Ben Hanlon.
Ben Hanlon, you say?
Yes. Is that significant?
Oh, it could be. I know Ben Hanlon. He's been prospecting around here for years. He spent some time with me in this very cabin. He ain't the kind to make something up. If it was him what draw the map, I don't know. Could be something to it. Why are you so interested? You going to go look for the gold?
I'm a city girl from New York. Could you really see me poking around out in the desert looking for gold?
No, I don't reckon I could. But if you was to take a notion to do it, and if I was you, I would use this map.
The next day, while Cornbread rode out on his track surveillance, Janelle found a trunk of clothes. Since they were mostly pants and shirts, she assumed they were old clothes of Cornbread's. But she also found a couple of dresses. As she examined the clothes more closely, she saw that the pants and shirts were all too small for Cornbread. On impulse, she took off her torn and stained dress and put on the pants and shirt. They were a perfect fit. When Cornbread returned from work that evening, he was surprised to see Marthy Lou's clothes being put to use.
Being as they were mostly pants and shirts rather than dresses, I wasn't sure if they were hers.
Dresses ain't always the handiest things to wear out here.
Now that I've spent a few days here, I think I can understand why. I hope you don't mind that I'm wearing your late wife's clothes.
Nope, I don't mind at all. Truth is, it pleasures me to see you wearing them. Puts me in mind of Marthy Lou, and I know she'd be real happy to see that the clothes were being worn.
By the start of the fourth day, Janelle felt she had recovered all her strength. And when Cornbread returned after a day of riding the track, she announced that it was time for her to leave.
Ain't no need for you to be rushing off.
I'd hardly say I was rushing off. I've imposed upon you for much too long now.
You ain't done no such thing. I was liking having your company around.
I've enjoyed your company as well. But I really do have to leave. Besides, this country is too wild and untamed for me. I think I'm going back to New York.
Are you sure you want to do that? Whatever it is that made you leave New York is still there.
What? What do you mean, whatever it is that made me leave New York? I haven't said anything to give you that idea.
You don't need to say nothing. I can read folks' eyes, same as I can read a critter's eyes. You run away from something or someone that put a deep hurt on you. All I'm saying is, like as not, when you go back, that someone or something will still be there.
You are a wise man, Cornbread.
But you're still planning on leaving.
Yes.
Well, that means you'll be taking the train.
Yes. That is, as soon as I can find a nearby depot.
Oh, you don't need a depot. I can get you on the train. You don't need no ticket, neither. That is, you don't need none betwixt here and Phoenix.
Phoenix?
Yep, that's near about the closest place where out there's a depot.
I don't know that I want to go to Phoenix.
Well, I reckon I could get you on a train to Tucson about as easy as I can for Phoenix. Only thing is, if you're aiming to go on to Superstition Mountain looking for gold, you need to do that from Phoenix.
Who said I was going to look for the gold?
Well, ain't you? I would if I was you.
I don't know. I hadn't really thought of it before.
But you're thinking of it now, ain't you?
Cornbread, do you really think there is anything to this map?
Could be. Like I said, I know Ben Hanlon, and he ain't one that goes around lying. If he drawed this map, then I'd say, yeah, there's something to it. Before you go back to New York, you ought to at least look around for a bit.
I wouldn't even know where to start.
Cornbread held up his finger as if asking for a moment's pause in the conversation. Then he went to the trunk that contained Martha Lou's clothes. He pulled out four pairs of pants and four shirts, all clean and neatly folded. He handed them over to Janelle.
You could start by taking these clothes.
Oh, Cornbread, I couldn't do that.
Why not?
Because they belonged to your wife.
Darling, She sure won't be using them now, will she?
No, I suppose not. Cornbread, I don't know what to say. Other than thank you.
As far as I'm concerned, them's always been a couple of pretty good words.
Janelle smiled broadly, then put her hand out to touch Cornbread's hand.
My friend, you have been a godsend to me. From the bottom of my heart, I thank you.
Oh, dang. I got something in my eye. Oh, now, first thing tomorrow, we'll go to the track and I'll flag down the train. I'll speak to the conductor and I'll tell him you're my kin. They'll let you on for free.
Returning from New York in the late afternoon, Falcon stopped in McAllister to repack his luggage, from city clothes to clothes in which he would be more comfortable and that were more appropriate for mountain and desert. He also picked up his guns and made arrangements to take his horse with him to Phoenix. He had to change trains to continue on to Phoenix, so he checked on the status of Lightning to make sure that he had gotten off the train as well.
Yes, sir. We've got your horse right here, Mr. McAllister. We have him checked on through to Phoenix. Do you want him fed?
Yeah, feed him and give him a good rub down. The train for Phoenix leaves when tonight?
Oh, round about 11.
Where's the best place to eat?
You got time. There's some tasty places downtown. Hightower's Cafe is my favorite.
I'll give it a try.
Falcon turned to leave, and it was then that he spotted the poster. Wanted for murder. A comely woman, Janelle Wellington. $1,000 reward, dead or alive. Contact Marshall Cairns, Phoenix, Arizona Territory. Now, surely there wouldn't be two Janelle Wellingtons in a town no bigger than Phoenix, Falcon figured. He had plenty of time before the train to Phoenix, so he decided to walk over to the sheriff's office. The sheriff was the only one in the building, and he was sitting behind the desk.
Troy Calhoun. I haven't seen you since that little ruckus back in Higby.
Well, as I live and breathe, Falcon McAllister.
The sheriff reached up and shook Falcon's hand.
What brings you to Flagstaff?
I'm on my way to Phoenix.
What are you going for?
Falcon walked over to the wall and perused a few of the wanted posters until he found the one he was looking for. Pulling it down, he took it over to Calhoun and showed it to him.
You know anything about this?
Yeah, little. According to the warrant out on her, she supposedly killed a banker down in Phoenix. Falcon, why are you interested in this?
I'm looking for her. She's the daughter of some friends of my brother and sister back in New York. The parents are quite wealthy, and they've asked me to find her and take her back to New York.
Wealthy, huh? You wouldn't guess someone like her would get mixed up in shooting a banker, would you?
I've not met her yet, but I have met her parents, and from what I know of them, I would say no. She's not someone I would expect to find in a predicament like this.
Uh-huh. That's sort of what I thought.
Why? Have you heard something about this case?
No, not directly. But the sheriff that got the warrant put out on her is Jimmy Cairns. What I know of Jimmy Cairns, he's just the kind of low-life bastard that would do something like that.
Jimmy Cairns? Wait a minute. Are you talking about the Jimmy Cairns who was once a deputy for Wyatt Earp?
So I hear.
And you say he's a lowlife?
I guess one law officer shouldn't talk about another one this way, but in my book, he is about as low as they come.
Sounds like you had a run-in with him.
Oh, yeah, you might say that. Last year, I had the occasion to deliver a prisoner to him. All the way down to Phoenix, the prisoner kept telling me that if I turned him over to Marshal Cairns, I was signing his death warrant. I figured he's just talking, but before I left town to come back up here, that prisoner was already dead. He tried to escape, Cairns said.
Maybe he did try to escape.
No, I don't think so. In fact, Muley, that was the prisoner's name, Muley Carson, Muley told me that Cairns would kill him, then claimed that he tried to escape, and that's exactly what happened.
Now, why would Cairns do that?
Muley said he had something on Cairns, something that if it got out, it would cause him a lot of trouble.
Did Carson tell you what it was?
No. All he said was that his only chance of staying alive was not to tell anyone about whatever it is he knew about Cairns. But, as it turns out, that didn't help him at all. Cairns killed him anyway, and I'm the one that delivered Muley to him. It's been sticking in my craw ever since.
It wasn't your fault, Troy. You were only doing your job.
Yeah, that's what I tell myself. Having a hard time making myself believe that, though.
I gotta admit, that doesn't sound like the kind of person Wyatt would have working for him.
I know. If he's the one who took out the warrant on this woman, there could be some reason for it other than the woman actually being guilty.
Like what?
The hell, Falcon. For all I know, the son of a bitch could have killed the banker his own self and is just doing this to cover up. I'm thinking that if you want to get that woman back to her folks alive, you better find her before Cairns does. Because whatever happened down there, I wouldn't be surprised if she didn't wind up just like Muley did.
Cornbread had managed to get Janelle a ride on a train that took her right back to the place she had fled. As he explained, if she really intended to look for the gold on Ben Hanlon's map, she was going to need to start from Phoenix. She didn't protest, because she didn't want him to know she had run away from there. But was it going to be safe for her? First thing Janelle saw when she walked across the depot platform was a wanted poster. It offered a $1,000 reward for her, dead or alive. The wanted poster was nailed to the outside wall of the depot so that every arriving and departing train passenger could see it. And Janelle stepped up closer to examine it a bit more carefully. Seeing the words dead or alive gave her a chill. $1,000 was a lot of money, and it could tempt almost anyone to collect it. The fact that the reward would be paid dead or alive meant that for all intents and purposes, she had already been found guilty. At least there was no picture of her, nor was there any description beyond a comely woman. She wasn't sure what she should do next. She wanted desperately to go back to her room in Mrs. Poindexter's boarding house, if for no other reason than to get her clothes and the little amount of money she had there. She was afraid to. She didn't think she had anything to fear from Mrs. Poindexter. She was sure her host didn't believe she was really guilty of murder. At the very least, she'd be willing to listen to Janelle's side of the story. So would Mr. and Mrs. Buckner, she figured. But to see either of them could put them in danger. And Janelle didn't want to do that.
Excuse me, Sonny.
Janelle turned to see who the man with the handcart was talking to.
Excuse me, son.
Oh.
Janelle stepped out of the way for him, then looked over at the window opening into the waiting room of the depot. And she saw her reflection. She was wearing the shirt and pants she had gotten from Cornbread, and her hair was piled up under an old slouch hat. She looked nothing at all like the beautiful, sophisticated woman who once graced the most elegant salons of New York. She also didn't look like the young woman who, for the last couple of months, had worked in Buckner's Ladies' Emporium, nor even like the woman who had ridden Vexation in the Independence Day race. And she certainly didn't look like someone who could be described as a comely woman. In fact, she didn't look like a woman at all. She looked for all the world like a young man. Janelle smiled broadly. That was it. From now on, her name was Joe Henry. All right, she had a disguise and a name, but she still couldn't take a chance on going back to the boarding house. Even in the camouflage, she was certain that Mrs. Poindexter would recognize her. As she was contemplating what she would do next, she saw a possible solution on the same wall where her wanted poster was being displayed. Not too far away was another poster. It read, "Help wanted, God-fearing boy, must be good with horses, good wages and room furnished for honest work. Apply at House Wright's Livery Stable."
Well, I don't know. I have to tell you, you look a mite puny to me.
Janelle swallowed a chuckle because Murray Housewright was at least an inch shorter than she was and couldn't have weighed much over 140 pounds. But tactfully, she withheld comment.
What would I have to be handling that's any heavier than a pitchfork for mucking out stalls? Or a saddle or a bale of hay? Well, hell, I can muck out shit with the best of them.
Well, maybe you can, and maybe you can't. The real question is, can you handle horses? You see, we not only board horses, we rent them too.
I can handle horses.
You can ride?
Yes, sir.
I don't mean, can you seat a horse that's been broken to ride gentle? I mean, can you ride a horse that sometimes has a mean streak?
I'm real good with horses.
I don't know. You don't look all that much like someone who can ride.
What's your toughest horse?
That'd be Prince John, I reckon. He don't buck or nothing like that, but he likes to run and jump. That horse would rather jump over something than go around it. And sometimes folks who are just renting a horse ain't quite ready to deal with something like that.
If I can ride that horse, will it prove to you I can handle horses?
You don't have no idea what you are getting yourself into. But if you're wanting to ride Prince John, be my guest.
House Wright made a sweeping gesture with his right arm toward one of the filled stalls. Looking across the stall door at Janelle was a very handsome chestnut horse, standing just over 16 hands high. Janelle thought she saw a lot of intelligence and a bit of whimsy in the horse's steady gaze. She walked over to the horse and stroked him on the face.
Hey, Prince John, how'd you like to go for a nice ride?
There are saddles over on the rack. Go pick you out one.
Janelle knew the test had already started, for there were several saddles, and she had to pick the one that was best suited for Prince John, not only according to the condition of the saddle, but also because of Prince John's conformity. She ran her hands over several saddles before picking one. She saw by the expression on House Wright's face that she had chosen well. Janelle put on a blanket and then the saddle. She tightened the cinch, then slapping Prince John on the side, got him to relax so she could tighten it again.
Old Prince John here likes to swell up like a toad the first time you try and saddle him. That way the saddle sometimes slips off. You done it just right.
Janelle mounted him, then rode into the paddock. She slapped her legs against his side and Prince John reared up. Janelle hung on easily, and when he came back down on all fours, he bolted forward. Seeing a watering trough that protruded out from a windmill, she headed directly for it. As the horse gathered himself for the jump, he sailed easily over the watering trough and then continued on the other side. As she had with vexation, she gave Prince John his head, allowing him to race all the way around the paddock, staying close to the fence. Finally, she trotted back to where House Wright was standing, brought the horse to a halt, then slid gracefully down from the saddle.
What'd you think?
Do I know you, boy?
Suddenly, Janelle realized she had almost exactly duplicated the ride she had done with vexation, and she felt a quick twinge of fear that she might be recognized.
No, I don't think so. I just arrived on the train today.
You just arrived today, did you?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's funny, because it sure seems to me like I've seen you before.
What about the job, Mr. House Wright? Am I hired?
What? Oh, yeah, sure. I need another person to work here, and there ain't no doubt as to whether or not you can ride. If you want the job, it's yourn.
Yeah, I very much want the job. Thanks.
For the next few days, Janelle's job consisted of feeding, watering, and rubbing down the horses. She also had to muck out a few stalls, but at least it was a paying job, and it gave her a place to stay. Her plan was to make enough money to outfit herself, then see if she really could use that map to locate the mine. She learned very quickly that Ben Hanlon, the man who had drawn the map, was dead. The story was he died while he was in jail as a result of being beaten and robbed. But Janelle was convinced that Cairns had killed him. She had no proof, of course, and not even any evidence to suggest such a thing. But she had seen him kill Mr. Montgomery over the map, so it was not hard for her to believe that he killed Hanlon as well. She knew also that if he discovered she was the boy working at House Wright's stable, he would kill her and get away with it, since she was wanted dead or alive. A couple of times she saw Nellie Buckner. Once she saw Mrs. Poindexter. She wanted desperately to go to him, to tell him who she was. But she bit her lip, continued her work, and watched him from afar.
Joe!
Yes, sir?
Somebody just told me that Corey Minna is down at the depot. He rented a horse from me last week, and he ain't never brought it back. I want you to go get the horse from him.
How do I do that?
Oh, hell, boy, just go up to him and ask for it.
All right.
Janelle started to leave.
Boy! Joe!
Janelle suddenly realized who that boy was directed to. She would have to watch that. She turned back toward House Wright.
Yes, sir?
Listen, Minna is, well, he ain't that friendly of a man. So if he gives you any guff about giving the horse back to you, don't you go pushing him, if you know what I mean.
Though Janelle had never met him in person, she had heard about Corey Minner's run-in with Ken Buckner. Anyone who couldn't get along with Ken Buckner, or who would purposely pick on him, hell, he couldn't be that good of a man.
If Minna says no, just walk on down to the marshal's office and tell him. Let the marshal get the horse back.
Marshal?
Janelle knew Minner was an unpleasant person, but no matter how unpleasant he might be, there was no chance he was going to recognize her. On the other hand, there was a very good chance the marshal would. So she had no intention of going to the marshal.
I don't think we'll need him.
Yeah, well, if you do need him, go get him. After all, that's what we pay him for. We don't pay him to go hunting some woman who the whole town don't believe killed Montgomery anyway.
As Falcon stepped down from the train in Phoenix, he noticed a smallish young man who was being accosted by a much larger man.
Please, Mr. Minner, I don't want any trouble.
Well, sonny, you got yourself a pile of trouble whether you want it or not. Most especially if you try and get on my horse.
That isn't your horse. You rented that horse from the House Wright stable. Didn't bring him back, and your contract is terminated.
My contract is terminated? That's pretty highfalutin' talk from a still wet behind the ears pipsqueak like you, ain't it?
Mr. Minner, all I'm doing is picking up Mr. Housewright's horse.
The young man showed the roughneck a piece of paper.
This is my authorization.
Yeah? Well, that authorization don't mean shit to me. As long as I have the horse, it's the same as my horse. Do you understand that?
If you pay the money you owe Mr. Housewright, I'm sure it can be worked out.
I ain't paying nothing to Housewright, and you ain't taking my horse.
That's just it, Mr. Minner. It isn't your horse.
Janelle started toward the horse. The bully pulled his pistol.
Boy, if you touch that horse, I'm gonna put a bullet in your goddamn back.
Although there were several people standing around watching the interplay between the two, Falcon noticed that not one person was making any sign of interfering. But despite the threat and the drawn pistol, the young man walked without hesitation to the horse in question. Minner pulled the hammer back and raised his pistol.
Mister, I don't think you want to do that.
Falcon had not drawn his own gun, expecting that once called upon, the man would come to his senses. He was surprised, therefore, when Minner swung his gun toward him and fired. The bullet hit the crown of Falcon's hat, knocking it off his head. Falcon crouched as Minner fired a second time. He drew his own pistol then. Falcon's shot struck Minner in the neck. With his eyes wide open in shock, he dropped his pistol and slapped both hands to the wound in his neck. Even as the blood was spilling between his fingers, he went down. Falcon walked over to look down at Minner, who was lying on his back with his eyes wide open, but sightless and clouding over with death. Suddenly, Janelle recognized the shooter. It was the man she had met on the train several weeks ago. It was Falcon McAllister.
Are you all right, boy?
Janelle continued to stare at McAllister, shocked by what had just happened.
I said, are you all right?
You killed him.
I reckon I did.
Why'd you kill him? I mean, over a horse.
Boy, if you had been paying attention, you would have seen that he was about to kill you over a horse. I didn't kill him because of a horse or you. I killed him because he was trying to kill me.
Oh, yeah, right. I owe you a debt of gratitude for saving my life.
What's your name, mister?
Well, my name is Joe. Joe Henry.
Joe. I'm Falcon McAllister.
Falcon stuck out his hand. Janelle hesitated. Then, realizing that his hand was still hanging there, she reached out to grab it.
Yeah, I know who you are.
Do I know you?
No, sir. I saw you once before and I'll remember you.
Oh, yeah, that happens a lot to me. I don't know if it's a curse or a blessing.
I owe you my thanks, Mr. McAllister. You saved my life.
I'll accept your thanks, but what I'm really gonna need is your statement.
My statement? My statement about what?
I imagine that the sheriff or the city marshal or someone will be here soon.
Why would the marshal come?
I just killed a man. Don't you think the marshal might be interested in that?
Oh, yeah, I suppose so. Let me deliver this horse to Mr. Housewright, then I'll go down to the marshal's office to tell him what happened.
I think we should see the marshal first.
No, that is, Mr. Housewright wants his horse right away.
Janelle swung into the saddle of the horse.
Oh, I have to get it to him. Yeah.
What the hell?
Falcon watched the young man ride off. Could it be that he was actually stealing the horse? Had Falcon made a huge mistake?
Oh, that's him, Marshal. That's the man that shot Corey Minner.
Looking toward the sound of the voice, Falcon saw a depot agent pointing at him. Beside him was a broad-shouldered man with a bushy mustache who was also wearing a star on his vest. The man approached Falcon.
Is that true, mister? Did you shoot Minner?
If that's this man's name, yeah, I shot him.
You're kind of pompous about that little matter, ain't you?
The sheriff drew his pistol and pointed it at Falcon.
I'll thank you to drop your gun belt.
Marshal, if you ask anyone around here, they'll tell you it was self-defense. He shot at me first.
Now that's true, Marshal. I seen it. Minner shot first. Fact is, Minner shot two times before this feller shot back. Now, this feller here didn't have no choice.
I knew Corey Minner. He was a bully, but I never known him to just start shooting at someone for no reason.
Well, I didn't say it was for no reason. All I said is that he started shooting at me. He had a reason.
And what was that reason?
He was bullying a young man. Not much more than a boy, actually. The boy was trying to take back a horse that belonged to his employer. When the young man started toward the horse, Minner pulled his gun and threatened to shoot him in the back. I called him on it. That's when he turned and started shooting at me.
So when he turned, you were pointing your gun at him? Mister, I would call that a hostile act. No wonder he shot at you.
My gun is in the holster.
Your gun was in the holster. He started shooting at you, but you killed him. Is that right? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yes, that's right.
Mister, if someone else has his gun out pointing it at you, and your gun is in the holster, you ain't gonna get your gun out in time to shoot him.
You have your gun out and pointed at me.
Yeah, I do, don't I?
Falcon suddenly had his pistol in his hand.
And now I have my gun out as well.
What the hell? How'd you do that?
It doesn't matter how I did it. The point is, I did it. I hope it convinces you I'm telling the truth.
He is telling it true, Marshal. Like I said, I saw the whole thing. Corey Minner was about to shoot the boy in the back, and this here feller called him on it. Minner turned around shooting, and the next thing you know, this feller drilled him dead center with one shot.
Marshal Cairns held the gun in his hand for a moment longer, then put the pistol back in his holster.
All right. If the depot agent is talking for you, I reckon you're telling the truth. But I'd like you to come on down to my office and sign a statement.
I'll be glad to, Marshal.
I'll be wanting a statement from you as well, Mr. Donovan.
What about the young man who works for the livery? I believe he said his name was Joe Henry.
Joe Henry? I know everyone in this town. I don't know anyone named Joe Henry.
He's new, Marshal. He only started working for Housewright last week.
All right. I'll take care of him later. Come along, mister. What's your name?
McAllister. Falcon McAllister.
You're Falcon McAllister?
Yeah.
What are you doing in my town, McAllister?
I didn't know it was your town. I thought this was all free country.
Yeah, it is. I didn't mean it like that. I was just curious is all. Come on down to my office and make a statement for me.
Falcon had not recognized Janelle, but their encounter had been several weeks ago and very brief, and several hundred miles from there. He had asked her to give the marshal a statement on his behalf, and she felt she owed such a statement to him. But she wasn't all that confident her disguise would fool the marshal. She decided not to chance it. She hated doing it, hated abandoning the man who had without question saved her life. And she knew there were many other witnesses who would testify for her. In fact, the others would be able to give even stronger statements because they had actually seen the whole event, whereas she had not. It had taken place behind her back. Janelle had to get out of town.
Any trouble?
Sort of, Mr. House Rat.
Sort of? What do you mean, sort of?
Well, I didn't see it because my back was turned, but evidently Mr. Minner was going to shoot me in the back. A man named McAllister called out to him. Mr. Minner turned and shot at McAllister, but missed. McAllister shot back and didn't miss.
Damn! You mean Corey Minner is dead?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry to hear that. Well, not that he's dead. If there was any son of a bitch in town that needed killing, it was Corey Minner. But he owed me a week's rent money on the horse, and now I won't be able to collect.
Well, how much did he owe you?
50 cents a day for 7 days, and that's,
$3.50.
Yeah. Say, you're pretty quick with figures.
Well, I know how you can recover that money, and a lot more.
How?
By making a small investment.
An investment with who? And for how much?
With me? And not too much. Just the extended loan of a horse, some bacon, beans, and salt.
What's this about, Joe?
You know the young woman who the marshal says killed Mr. Montgomery?
Yeah, I know her. She's the one that won the horse race on the 4th of July. What about her?
She's a friend of mine.
A friend of yours? Damn, boy! You mean she's your girlfriend?
Yeah, she's my girlfriend.
Well, boy, you got more sand in you than I thought. I mean, a little old pipsqueak of a man like you with a girlfriend like that, who would have thunk it?
Yeah, who would have?
What's that got to do with me investing in you?
Janelle told me what happened between her and the banker.
Really? What did she say happened?
She had gone to the bank to apply for a job when she saw Marshal Cairns and Mr. Montgomery arguing over a map. Marshal Cairns killed Mr. Montgomery.
I knew it. Never did believe that pretty girl could do anything like murder. But Cairns, I think that son of a bitch would just as soon shoot you as speak to you. You say they were arguing over a map?
Yes, sir.
What kind of map?
Map to a gold mine.
And you say that Cairns killed Montgomery over the map.
That's right, he did. Only Montgomery had hidden the map, so Cairns didn't get it. Then, just before he died, he told Janelle where he had hid the map.
Where's the woman now?
Well, I can't tell you that.
You can't? Or you won't?
I won't.
Do you know where the map is?
Yeah, I have it.
Can I see it?
Well, I don't have it on me. I've hidden it. But I know where it is.
Where is this gold?
Why should I tell you where it is? If I did that, you wouldn't need me.
In general, where is it? White Tank Mountains? Muzzetsalls? McDowell Mountains?
It's at Superstition Mountain, near Weaver's Needle.
Oh, shit. Oh, that's what I was afraid of.
Well, what do you mean that's what you're afraid of? What's so funny?
Oh, hell, boy. You were talking about the Lost Dutchman, aren't you? Everybody and his brother has gone out to Superstition looking for that old Dutchman's gold mine.
Yeah, but this map tells exactly where to look once you get to Weaver's Needle.
And you believe the map, huh?
Well, evidently Mr. Montgomery did. He loaned the old prospector money just on the strength of the map. And the marshal believed it enough to kill the banker for it.
Well, somebody killed him anyway. And there had to be a reason. I guess a map to a gold mine is as good as any other reason.
What do you say, Mr. Housewright? Will you back me?
Let me get this straight. All you want is the loan of a horse and some food. Is that right? And if you find this gold, you'll split it with me.
Yeah.
How long do you plan to be out looking for it?
A week. Two at the most.
All right. I may be crazy, boy, but you've got yourself a deal.
Now, Terry Cooper, one of House Wright's hands, had overheard that entire conversation, standing just inside the stable door. He told House Wright he had to go to the hardware store to get a ring for the harness he was working on, but he headed instead for a shack he owned about 2 miles south of town. He was renting that shack to a man who had worked at the livery for a while, under the name Jesse Jones. Shortly after he rented the shack, Cooper found out the man's real name was Luke Mueller. Cooper had heard of him, and he felt honored that such a famous man would actually stay in his shack. Mueller told Cooper he was only going to hang around for another few weeks, then he was going to go out on the outlaw trail again. He invited Cooper to ride with him, and Cooper fully intended to do so. But now he had something else on his mind. He was sure that the information he had about the map to the gold mine was valuable. And he was equally sure Mueller would know better than he how to utilize that information. Deputy John Forbes was sweeping the floor of the marshal's office when Falcon and the marshal stepped inside.
What was the shooting about?
This man killed Corey Minner.
Ah, good for you. Minner was a no-good son of a bitch.
Did you hear what I said? I said this man just killed Corey Minner.
I heard you say that, Marshal, but it must have been a fair fight. Otherwise, the two of you wouldn't have come just walking in like that. You'd have him in shackles or something. Also, he wouldn't be wearing his gun, so I figured the killing must have been legal.
It was legal, all right. That don't mean I gotta like it.
Drum sat down at his desk and then opened a ledger book and picked up a pen and quill.
All right, for the record, tell me what happened.
I saw a man threaten to shoot a boy in the back. I called out to him, and he turned his gun on me, fired at me, and I shot back.
And killed Corey Minner.
Yep. That was the whole idea of shooting at him, Marshal.
Well, you don't gotta be so haughty about it, mister. Shooting out there on the depot platform like you done, you could have hit anybody.
I wasn't aiming at anybody. I was aiming at Corey Minner.
Hell, Marshal Cairns, what are you ragging him for? In my book, anybody that killed Corey Minner ought to get a medal. He was the biggest no-count in Maricopa County, and you know it.
Well, it ain't your book we're concerned about, is it, Deputy? When you get right down to it, it's the judge's book. And I'm just trying to get the story straight so as to satisfy the judge, that's all. Now, when you called out to him, was you holding a gun?
My gun was in the holster. I think the witnesses will verify that.
You're talking about the fella Joe Henry that no one has ever heard of?
He was one of the witnesses, yeah. He was the one that Minner was about to shoot before I butted in.
Butted in. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You butted in where you had no business butting in.
If I hadn't butted in, he would have shot the boy. You heard the others testify to that.
Drum made the entry, then put the pen down.
Yeah, I heard him. Let me ask you this, McAllister. How come I haven't met you before? How long you been in town?
I just arrived on the train.
Damn. You just arrive and kill somebody the first minute you're in town? I sure as hell hope you don't plan to stay long.
Only long enough to find a young woman and take her back to her parents.
Oh? And what young woman would that be?
It's someone you know, I believe. Her name is Janelle Wellington.
Janelle Wellington. I know her, all right. But if you do find her, you won't be taking her back to her parents. You'll be turning her over to me.
Yeah, I saw that you have a paper on her, alleging that she murdered someone.
I ain't alleging a damn thing. She shot down Mr. Montgomery in cold blood.
I have to say, from everything I've heard about her, it really doesn't seem possible she would be the kind to shoot someone.
You call me a liar, McAllister?
I'm suggesting your information might be wrong.
Well, it ain't wrong, because I seen her do it myself. She was trying to rob the bank, and she killed the banker, C.D. Montgomery.
You sure we're talking about the same woman? I mean, with her background, it seems unlikely she would be robbing a bank. Her father's a very wealthy man. If she needed money, all she'd have to do is ask. The thought of her murdering anyone is even more unlikely.
Is the Janelle Wellington you're looking for a pretty woman? And is she from New York?
I've never seen her, but they say she is pretty. And yeah, she's from New York.
Then we are talking about the same woman. So if you find her, you have to turn her over to me. That's the law.
And you know all about the law, don't you?
Yeah, goddammit, I'm the city marshal here.
And before you became city marshal, you were deputy to Wyatt Earp.
That's right. How'd you know that?
Something I heard.
You ever met Wyatt Earp?
I've heard a lot about him.
What have you heard?
I've heard he likes to play cards, has a lot of loyalty to his brothers and friends, and that he's a very good lawman.
Yep. Everything you just said about him is true, all right. I know, 'cause, like you say, I once deputed for him.
And where was that?
Beg pardon?
Where did you deputy for Wyatt Earp?
It was in Wichita. Why is it you're asking me all the questions? What difference does it make to you?
No particular reason. It's just that I heard a story once about something that happened in Wichita. You being Wyatt's deputy, I thought maybe you would know a little something about it.
I might. What's the story?
It seems that a fellow was about to repossess an unpaid-for piano from a whorehouse. But a lot of drovers got angry about it, so in order to keep the peace, Wyatt Earp paid for the piano himself.
Yep, that's true, all right. I was standing right there by his side when it happened.
Falcon stared at Cairns for a long moment.
Of course, I also heard another story about the same event.
Yeah, what story is that?
Well, the other story I heard was that Wyatt Earp was the one who was going to repossess the piano. The drovers had to put up the money to keep it from being taken away, and that made him mad. A group of almost 50 armed cowboys gathered across the river from Wichita, planning to come into town and raise hell. But Wyatt Earp stood right in the middle of the bridge and single-handedly talked those cowboys into withdrawing, without so much as one shot being fired.
Right. Right, that's the way it was.
Which is the way it was, Marshal? I've told you two different stories, and you've agreed to both of them.
Well, I don't know. That was a long time ago. How am I expected to remember everything that happened that long ago?
Oh, I'm sure it's quite hard to remember. So much has happened since then.
Damn right, a lot's happened.
Drum closed the ledger.
I've got everything I need from you now. You're free to go.
Do I need to stay around town for an inquest?
Ain't gonna be no inquest. I'm through with you now.
Oh, thanks. I'll be on my way then.
McAllister.
Falcon turned back.
Yeah?
About you looking for that woman, Janelle Wellington. You are free to look for her, but like I said, if you find her, you bring her back to me. You got that? She's a wanted murderer, and I intend to see she hangs for it.
Falcon nodded, but he said nothing. Falcon had his suspicions about the man who was calling himself Jimmy Cairns ever since he had spoken with Troy Calhoun back in Flagstaff. That was why he set the trap with the story about the piano in the whorehouse. It was the second story that was true, not the first. Falcon had not been there, but his brother Matthew had, and told him all about it. Falcon didn't know who the man claiming to be Jimmy Cairns was, but he knew who he wasn't. He was not Jimmy Cairns. Falcon planned to keep his eye on him. He walked down Central toward the railroad depot to claim his horse. Then he rode to the livery stable, not only to board his horse, but also to see why the young man Joe Henry hadn't come to give a statement for him. Janelle, riding Prince John and carrying a few bags of food furnished by a housewright, headed toward Superstition Mountain. She leaned over and patted the horse's neck a few times.
Oh, Prince John, I'm sorry I had to lie to Mr. Housewright like that, but I couldn't very well tell him who I really am, could I? When you think about it, I didn't really lie. I said I knew Janelle Wellington, and I do. It's just that I had to get away from town before I had an encounter with the Marshal. While the disguise is working pretty well, I wouldn't want to give that evil man the opportunity to get close enough to see through it. Now, what do you say we have us a little run? Yeah!
Janelle slapped her legs against Prince John's sides and let him gallop for at least a mile. The further away from town she got, the safer she felt. Her only regret was that she had not been able to testify for the man who had saved her life. But she was certain that Falcon McAllister would get all the exculpatory testimony he might need to stay out of trouble.
Howdy. Would you be Mr. Housewright?
That's right. What can I do for you?
A couple of things. For one, I'd like to board my horse with you.
That'll be 20 cents a day. 30 cents a day if I have to feed him.
By all means, feed him.
Falcon handed the reins over. Housewright patted the horse's neck.
Good-looking horse. He don't look like he's been rode hard.
Hasn't been ridden at all. We just arrived on the train.
Did you now? I heard there was a shooting down there shortly after the train arrived. Did you happen to see it?
I saw it.
The fella that got himself killed, a real lowlife he was. Don't know nothing about the fella that killed him, but if it was up to me, he'd get a medal. Oh, you said there was a couple things you wanted, besides the horse. What else was it?
I'm looking for a young man. Not much more than a boy, really. He works here. At least, I think he works here.
You'd be talking about Joe Henry, I reckon.
Yeah. I'd like to see him, if you don't mind.
Oh, I don't mind at all. But he don't work here no more.
But I just saw him. He said he was picking up a horse for you.
Yes, sir, he done that all right. Fact is, he picked it up from Corey Minner, the fella that got himself killed. But it's like I said, mister, Joe don't work here no more. He quit no more than 15 minutes ago. Why are you so interested in him?
Well, he was a witness to the shooting. He said he would make a statement to the marshal for me.
What do you mean, make a statement to the marshal for you? Why would you be needing a statement?
I'm the one that shot Corey Minner.
Oh! You'd be Falcon McAllister, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Housewright stuck his hand out.
Oh!
Then pulled it back and wiped it off before sticking it out again.
Mr. McAllister, I would like to shake your hand.
Falcon accepted the proffered handshake.
Sorry the boy didn't come sign a statement for you. I don't know why he didn't.
Well, as it turned out, I didn't need him. There were some other witnesses who spoke up for me. I was just curious as to why the boy didn't come, is all.
Oh, I know why.
You do? Why?
You just getting into town and all, you might not know nothing about it, but the marshal's done put a paper out on a woman by the name of Janelle Wellington. She worked down at the Buckner Emporium, she did, near about the prettiest woman I done ever seen.
Yeah, I saw the wanted poster on her. What does that have to do with the boy that works or did work for you?
Just about everything. Joe says that Miss Wellington is his girlfriend. He also says she ain't the one who killed Mr. Montgomery. That the marshal himself is the one who done the killing. Joe claims the girl seen it all.
Does he know where she is?
Well, he... Look here. You ain't looking to find the woman and claim that reward, for yourself, are you? Because if you are, I ain't planning on helping you none at all. Me and Joe Henry's in cahoots on this. I loaned him the horse and gave him some food, and soon as he finds the gold, we are going to split it.
Whoa, finds the gold? Now slow down. What gold?
Oh, shit. I don't know as I should tell you anything else. I got nothing again, you understand. But got me an investment to protect.
Very well, Mr. Housewright. I won't bother you anymore. Please just see to my horse.
You ain't got nothing to worry about there. I'll take real good care of your horse.
Leaving the livery, Falcon considered his next move. Where was it Housewright said Janelle had worked?
Was it Buckley's?
Falcon walked central from one end to the other, but he saw nothing that looked like Buckley. Then, on Adams, he saw Buckner's Ladies Emporium and knew at once that that was the place he had been looking for.
Time to do a little shopping for the truth.